Welcome, good people. John M. Schrader here. Welcome to my world, and welcome to Trespassing Allowed, where boundaries are meant to be crossed, stories are meant to be shared, and laughter is still the best way to navigate, at least in my world, through life's unexpected detours. So, happy early 4th of July, podcast 7 and 8, which will be sharing with you over the next few days. I'm excited. 4th of July is probably one of my favorite holidays of the year, but I would say may the fireworks be friendly, may the heat be cool, and may this country, just for one day at least, dwell on the positive. For some, you may have to dig deep, but keep digging. It's down there somewhere. And when you find it, your day may not brighten up like a 4th of July aerial illumination, but even just a handheld sparkler is a step in the right direction. Remember, every day you have a choice. You can look past the 20 different positive things and dwell on that one negative that you found. Or as my mother, Mrs. Janie Schrader, would say, in every bunch of bad, there is a piece of good. And on that, we can smile. So as you heard last time, I went on what I am calling an epic fishing trip. A bunch of my really good friends, we went on our 30th annual fishing man trip to Lake Cumberland. Amazing lake, over 100 miles long, manufactured by man many years ago and has one of the most beautiful shorelines I've seen in the Midwest. It has hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of coves that it's not too hard to get lost. I've been there a number of times. Earlier, we used to go down and rent houseboats with friends, and it's just an amazing lake that can make it great for families who want to hang out together. Or it also has so many of these coves that you can go back and you almost feel like you own the place. Why was this an epic fishing trip? Well, the whole reason we go on these once a year is to just find out how good the fishing is, find out how good a fisherman we are. And why was this an epic fishing trip? Well, let's see. We caught so many fish that on the fish fry night, we all ate pizza and we had one can of sardines for $1.24. Yeah, our fishermen blamed it on the warm water, the time of year, and we just were too busy to find a good guide. But you know, you would think with thousands of fishing lures and bait that we could find some cooler water, but then, I don't know, maybe it was what was in our coolers that made the fish feel safer. Or did the contents of the cooler cause the fishermen to, well, not to be as concerned about what they reeled up as much as how quickly they could open another can of that bush? Light. You'll have to ask them that question. A couple of days, we took some side-by-sides and four-wheelers out, and you know you're having an adventure when you're turning your side-by-side back over, off of its side, on a couple of occasions. We were able to find some local people there that were able to take us into some amazing side-by-side trails, mountain trails, that just really made you appreciate what a wonderful and beautiful country we're in. And yes, I would be remiss if I did not tell you that while we were up there, a very rare moment, a few of us got to see one of the largest black bears I have ever seen in my life, and our tour man even said he'd never seen one that big either. As we were coming around one of the curves, the huge male was sitting kind of right in the middle of the trail. And once he saw us, he just kind of took off the opposite direction. It's always interesting. You go to some of these places and you ask people, how often will you see the black bear? Will you see the moose or the elk? And it's funny. Some of the people who live there will say, I haven't seen one in years and years. And then suddenly an hour later, you're seeing something so amazing. You kind of wonder, is it time to buy a lottery ticket? Another crazy thing we saw was we saw this old guy who I guess he was feeling young and free, shimmied down a 40-foot tree in a matter of about 6 seconds. But some in the crowd were smart enough to realize, but can this old fart climb up that same tree as easily? Can I help it if the tree is right next to a 50-foot cliff and I did not have a wardrobe malfunction? I don't think so. But again, being an old Boy Scout and loving to climb trees and knowing a little bit about the safety of this and that, which I'm sure it scared others, shimming down that tree gave me that moment and that feeling that I guess I'm not as old as people think I should be. The only thing we are absolutely sure of that we had given her wives a wonderful week break from, well, from us. For our wives, sometimes silence is golden, especially as our marriages approach our golden years. So there we were. Great gentleman by the name of John McCullough put up with about 18 of us at his place. Amazing, nice floating boats where we just floated in the water, enjoying the beauty, the sun, the relaxation. And with all the stories and the details and all of the somewhat crazy fish stories, it once again reminded me of one of my favorite books I'm looking forward to write, The Immaturity of Man, especially when our wives aren't around to make us behave. I can't wait to get that book out someday. And so if any of you ladies are out there who would like to add your 2 cents worth, just send me an email. So yeah, the book is called The Immaturity of Man. At least one gender will agree. Yeah, this is Trespassing Aloud, the podcast where aloud has many different meanings. Someday, I'll let you look as far into my past and you will feel like you're allowed to judge me. And you are. I've always kind of said that people who want to judge me, good or bad, right or wrong, that's up to you. Will I agree with your judgment of my life? I'm not sure. There are two sides to every story, as you've heard me say, but I'll try to be an open book. So these last two podcasts in this series of 8 has been pretty much building my foundation for those of you who may not have known me yet. I'm so glad that technology has finally caught up with me. Now you get to hear the crap that drives my close friends crazy and drives my family even crazier. Hopefully, you know a little bit more about me than you did on podcast 1. Hopefully, you'll stick around after podcast 8 and beyond. But if you notice that I have a lot of competition in this podcast world. So if you're listening to my podcast, I greatly appreciate it. But with the competition, as a guy who loves a great wrestling match, competition is good. You learn from it, and it helps build you up. So let's touch base with one of the main tenets of this podcast. And it's why, in my opinion, it's a good idea if you're struggling with your world at times, you feel like you don't have control of your life, you feel like every day someone is telling you what to do. A lot of this podcast is going to try to help you decide, do I ever really want to own my own business? And if I'm going to own my own business, what are the things I need to consider? To some people, owning your own business will be the most empowering decision, the most exciting decision, a decision that you can look back 20, 30, 40 years later and say, thank God I did. However, if you don't do it correctly, owning your own business, no question, can be so excruciating and frustrating that if you can just get out with what you started, you may decide that you're just not that type of person. So the story today I think I want to share is one of self-deprecation. To me, self-deprecation is so important in my podcast because it's not as important for you to know what I've done well. It's just as important for you to know of things that I didn't necessarily do well or because I didn't use the proper CPR. I had to realize that there are always mistakes to be made. There's always things that you need to think through better. But more importantly, with self-deprecation, it allows me to look at my life and say, what did I learn from that? So today I'm going to share with you a moment that I call the story of the stones. Years after I moved on from simply a maintenance and mowing company, and we developed ourselves into a fairly moderate-sized landscaping company, anywhere from 15, 20, 25 employees. One of the things that I got very involved with was getting in the business of stone work, whether it be through aquatics, outcroppings. A lot of my landscaping dealt with a huge variety of stone. We're talking hundreds and thousands of tons of stone that we could possibly sell each year in a wide variety of ways. So I was always out there looking for opportunities of where could I get stone at a good price, sell it either retail or install it. And it was the one product, I think, as I mentioned in the past, that if you bought my stone, I would give you a 1,000-year guarantee that this stone would not die. Everything else on my property was probably about a 1 year. The koi I sold was maybe about 24 hours. But stone was something that I loved because once I placed it, I didn't have to worry about if it rained or too much heat. It was a great product. But I had an opportunity a number of years ago where I noticed that they were starting to build a highway not far from my house leading to the University of Southern Indiana, my alma mater. And as I passed by the construction crews day in and day out, I noticed that they were unearthing a large amount of stone. And these were a type of sandstone that some of them were as large as 4 or 5 tons a piece. Some were smaller, maybe a half a ton. But one of the things I noticed was that they were creating a larger and larger pile on the highway. I knew the construction company. And so I've always told myself, no question is ever a dumb question. And if you ask a question, yes or no, 50% chance you just might get what you want. So when I went up to the foreman on the job, I introduced myself and he knew of me. He knew of my company. And I explained to him that I noticed that there was an awful large pile of stone, approximately 1,000 tons. Most of the stone back in the day that I would sell, we would get somewhere between $250 to $400 a ton, depending on if it was retail, wholesale, or installation. So 1,000 tons of stone was certainly something that made me excited. And I asked him, what are you going to do with all this stone? He said he really wasn't sure. It wasn't something that they were really wanting to deal with. And after a few phone calls and talking with the owner of the company, we made a deal that, John, we will deliver this stone to you for only the cost of getting it from our place to your place. So are you willing to pay $10 a ton for this stone to be delivered? Doing the quick math, it made a lot of sense. If I could get 1,000 tons of stone for $10,000, and then we could take this stone and sell it for $250 a ton, let's see, that's $250,000 in profit. Plus, I now have a product that for the next several years, my designers and my salespeople could sell. So I remember going to a manager's meeting with my managers in the company, and I was pretty excited. I wrote the big letters, big numbers on the board, and basically, guys, for $10,000, we have $250,000 worth of a product. And we already had several jobs lined up where the stone would work great in either outcropping or building retaining walls. By far, my best buy of my career, I thought. And though my mind started racing as to just how often we could sell the stone, and people began coming into the nursery seeing the humongous piles of stone, I felt it was a good decision. In order for us to use the stone, though, one of the things I realized I had to do was most of my customers could not handle a 4-ton block of stone. So I had a gentleman come in one day. We began to use a huge compactor where we were able to break this stone up in smaller pieces. But as we did this, I expected it to take this gentleman at least a couple days to break the stone the way I wanted it. I'm sitting in my office, and sure enough, after about 5 hours, he comes in and says, "John, just wanted to let you know that this stone seems to be extra soft." "What do you mean this stone is extra soft?" "Well, different stones have different densities. Different stone have different thicknesses, hardnesses. This stone seemed to be breaking up a little easy." As I went out to join him and could see how quickly he was breaking this stone up, it became obvious to me that maybe this stone wasn't the hardest stone in the neighborhood. We had already completed one large retaining wall with this stone. It was actually for a very nice customer that they had an old railroad tie wall that was falling down. And we put about 50 to 70 tons of stone on this project. And now that it was up, I am now realizing that maybe this stone was not the hardest stone that was ever out there. And so I had to make some decisions. The first decision was tell my designers, my salespeople, "Hey, we're not selling the stone right now. I've got to process what exactly we have and what we can or can't do with it." If someone wanted to come in and buy this stone as, say, like a riprap, if they wanted to buy this stone and they just needed it for fill or aesthetics, we had to be very honest with them that this stone may take care of your problem, but we also had to be very honest with them to say this stone was not as consistent as a lot of the other stone that we were selling. In fact, honestly, this was the softest, more brittle stone that I had ever really sold. And I thought back, did the people on the highway crew realize at that time that this stone was so brittle? What was its true value? So eventually, I took a lot of this stone, brought it back to my property. Actually, we had quite a bit of the stone on my personal property. And as I decided to do what I think a lot of people may not have done. To a lot of people, this stone was not really valuable. So, gosh, what do? Dig a hole and bury it? Push it over? Do we use this stone for other purposes that we may regret? A side note, surprisingly, some 15 years later, I have gone back to that particular wall I was telling you about. And to this day, I can't quite understand why this stone on that wall did so much better and has held its integrity. But the rest of the stone, I made a decision. It was a decision that, for me, told me that when you make mistakes, remind yourself of that. So there is a long line of stone around my lake that has crumbled, sometimes in pieces and parts of 5, 6, 7, 8 pieces of one stone that was there. Every morning, to keep myself in the shape I hope I can stay in, I do a 45-minute jog, walk, bouldering, axe throwing. And when I get to the bouldering, I am walking across the rock that was basically not a $250,000 asset. The good news is I actually made money on the deal, but I didn't quite make that much. But every morning as I walk across the brittle rock, improving my balance, or at least hoping to maintain my balance, there's always a thought that goes through my mind. What was the element of this product that made it not as profitable as I had hoped? What part of my confidence, patience, and respect would I have to plug this on? No question, the patience was the issue. As I saw the stone on the highway, I knew the time that I was going to be able to transport this stone because the company was going to be the company that was going to be transporting on was very short-lived. I couldn't let this stone sit there for a year and process it and do my own quality control on it. Because this was a very time-elemented product, it was the lack of patience, the lack of really doing that research and being patient enough to take a piece of equipment out there and play with this stone a little bit. So I tell this story because every day as a business owner, you get to make some pretty crazy decisions. And some of these decisions, if done well, will take you on a path of success. Some of these decisions that did not turn out well, in my opinion, are the kind of things that you need to remember, you need to think about, you need to ask yourself every time I'm on this stone walking around the lake, which hopefully someday we might open up for a day or two. What is it that I did wrong with this product? Again, I didn't make the $250,000 that I was hoping. The $10,000 that it cost to get the stone to my location, we did very well with that, but nothing close to what I was hoping. So the story of the stone is a story that, as a businessman, it went from complete and total jubilation to, no, it wasn't quite this good. But I wasn't going to bury it. I wasn't going to dig a hole and put it in there and try to forget. That's not the way John M. Schrader works. I want to know the things that I have done poorly. I want to feel comfortable to tell this story that for many out there may say, my God, he is an idiot. But tomorrow morning, once again, as I'm stepping very carefully from one stone to the next, I actually will smile and say, thank goodness these stones aren't sitting on somebody else's property. So there it is, the story of the stones, how 1,000 tons turned out to be one of those miscues that, as long as you don't forget about it, and as long as you process it long enough, can you take something that some people would find as an absolute disaster and can you turn it into something positive? Do not forget about your miscues. They will remind you every day to be patient next time. And who knows? If you put them in the right place at the right time, they may just keep you in shape. All right. Let's go from that to something kind of funny. If I can, I'd like to kind of tie into, I think a number of you may have watched what people are calling an epic debate. And so as I think about the debate and I think about the two gentlemen that was in front of us for nearly an hour and a half as 51 million people watched on, one of the things I took from the debate were that both of the gentlemen constantly were not believing that the other person was always telling the truth. And it seems like we often, with our red side and our blue side, whether it's the Fox group or the CNN group, you always hear that same thing. I don't know if they're telling the truth. So with that, let me share this story. And no, this isn't a true story unless you want it to be. So a man one day was wanting to buy a dog. He had some kids. He was ready to enlarge the family with a nice dog. So as he looks in the paper, he's going down the for sale ads. And sure enough, there is a nice large ad in the paper that says, dog for sale, $300. But this is a talking dog. He read it again. This is a talking dog for $300. The man was curious enough to decide, okay, I've got to follow up on this. So he drives to the house, knocks on the door, and there, sure enough, a man comes to the door. And he says, excuse me, sir, are you the gentleman who is selling the talking dog? And he said, yeah, he's right here. And he looks down and the dog looks up at him and the dog says, hello. And the man couldn't quite believe his ears. He starts looking around. Is this one of those ventriloquist moments or not? So the gentleman offers him to come in, sit down to have a glass of tea. And he proceeds to explain that, yes, his dog has the amazing ability to talk. And so as they sat there, the man looking at the dog and the dog looking back at him, he says to the dog, so tell me a story. Now, sure enough, the dog told him a story. He begins by telling him, yes, I was born a pup here in Indiana. And as I grew up, I wanted to serve my country. And so during the Kuwaiti War, they trained me to be one of the dogs that would sniff out bombs and help out our military. And as he's telling this story, the guy just can't quite believe it. But you know, after the war was over, he said, I came back and I wanted to serve my country and I wanted to help people. So they trained me to be one of these rescue dogs, you know, the kind of dog that if there is a calamity somewhere, I could go through and hopefully I could find, you know, the people and save them. And this man was absolutely blown away. Here he was sitting on a chair, hearing the articulation of a dog. It was dreamlike. He looks at the guy selling the dog, and the guy just kind of shrugs his shoulders, and he said, yeah, it's a dog. So the dog then butted in one more time, and so then, yes, after I did that for a while, he said, I finally decided it was time to retire, so I'm just kind of hanging out, and I think I can be your best friend. Finally, as the dog turned away and walked away, he said to the man, he said, I can't believe this. This dog is actually talking. He is smarter than most people I talk to. But can you tell me why in the world would you ever decide to sell a dog like this for only $300? Man looks up to him and kind of smirks and says, because he's a liar? Yeah. Yeah. See, the dog really, he wasn't, you know, doing all those great things. And because he's a liar, this dog's value went down greatly. Not a true story, unless you want it to be. I bring this up because it was interesting during the debate. You heard both sides constantly calling the other a liar. And I think one of the frustrations we have as a country and as a people is that why is it that more often than not, when we hear something, we now wonder, are we hearing the truth? Are we hearing what the facts are? Are we just hearing a story that makes this individual look good? Tough to say. But for some reason, the debate the other night made me think of this story of the talking dog that sometimes may embellish or downright lie about what he's talking about. By the way, the dog's name is Fred. So if you guys are ever out and you see a dog talking to himself, just call Fred and see what happens. So that being said, I think this pretty much closes up my podcast for the day. Once again, with the 4th of July coming, I love my country. I love my family. I love my God. And as you all know, I just love people. But not always in that order. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening. Look forward to talking to you again soon.